All right, so welcome to the New Orleans Theater. I've got to say, I've always wanted to be in a theater, so I've now a lifelong dream. No, not really, actually. My name is Robert Gillies. I am a regional architect for the U.S. DoD practice here. I work with a lot of our largest customers at Microsoft, so I do a lot of really neat stuff with some really big customers. Anybody wants to send me an email, my email's in the slide deck. Somebody asked me earlier, all the slide decks are available on the, what is it, msteched.com website, so you do have access to all the slide decks. I know it's the last session of the day, it's already 5 o'clock, everybody wants to get out and have a drink. There's not a whole lot of material here. I'm probably not going to go the whole hour and 15 minutes. Is that okay with everyone? Anybody got any objections? All right. I'm going to try not to rush through it, but we'll have plenty of time for questions and things, so let me know if anybody's got anything. You got a problem with it, Scott? All right. All right, so our agenda today, we're going to talk a little bit about the fundamentals of deployment of Exchange, the things that allow us to coexist with Exchange 2007, Exchange 2010, and the things that allow us to upgrade, what our requirements are there. Talk a little bit about public folder migrations and about a few things about how you manage things when you're in a coexistence model. Here's the curtains. I love the curtains. Yay! So let's start talking about deployment, the fundamentals of deploying Exchange 2013. So we've got two coexistence scenarios. So everybody knows when we came out with RTM, we didn't have a coexistence model. We hadn't released CU1, which this slide doesn't really call out CU1, but Exchange 2013 CU1 is required for coexistence with 2010 and 2007. And for 2010, we didn't have the coexistence model until we had SP3. 2007, it was SP3 RU10. So you have to have these versions to allow you to coexist with Exchange 2013. So Exchange 2013 CU1, 2010 SP3, 2007 SP3 RU10. Okay? As far as the clients are concerned, our primary client, as always, is Outlook. That's our Better Together client, the one that gives you what we consider to be the best experience as a user. Outlook 2010, 2007, and 2013 are supported. Remember now we're doing Outlook Anywhere only. You don't have the old mappy RPC connection that we used to have. It's now an RPC or HTTP connection for every client. So this is a difference in the way that you have to think about how your clients are connecting. Typically, some of my customers, because of the security constraints, didn't implement RPC or HTTPS, didn't implement the Outlook Anywhere. You have to think about that. Make sure that you remember that now we're moving models. Everything connects to Exchange via RPC or HTTPS, via Outlook Anywhere. Okay? That is a paradigm change as far as Outlook and your internal networks is concerned. We did have some customers that would have that Outlook Anywhere as their only connection model before, but now, I mean, this is required. This is the way Outlook connects. No more will you see the clients connecting via Mappy RPC. We do support Outlook for the Mac and Entourage 2008 for the Mac with the Web Services Edition. Those are EWS clients. And obviously, all the Exchange Active Sync, IMAP, POP clients that are out there and the web clients for OWA are supported as well. So in the Active Directory, we have some limitations as well. You have to be Windows Server 2003 Forest functional level or higher, and you have to have at least one SP2 or later GC, DC in each Active Directory site, right? Typically, we want to see you at SP2 or better on Windows Server 2003 anyway, and you need to remember that technology is 10 years old, right? This is for support. This is not really a recommendation. If it was a recommendation, we'd certainly be recommending something a lot newer than that, right? This is the oldest that will be supported. Still do not support read-only DCs or read-only GCs. Exchange doesn't know how to use those. It has to have a writable partition. So the read-only DCs and GCs, we can't support those with Exchange. Now, this namespaces thing, we have this discussion with every version of Exchange. Does everyone know what contiguous and non-contiguous namespaces are? A contiguous namespace is one tree in your forest. Non-contiguous means you have multiple trees in your forest. So in an Active Directory forest, it's a forest. We call it a forest because it's not just one tree. You could have contoso.com and the subdomains for that, and you could also have fabricam.com in that same Active Directory forest. We do support that. Non-contiguous, you'll also hear it called discontiguous, but non-contiguous namespaces we do support. Single label domain means you don't have like .com or .mil. So typically that means that your DNS domain name matches your NetBIOS domain name. That's usually what you see with a single label domain. Doesn't mean it has to be that way, but that's typically what we see. That is supported. And disjoint namespaces, this is the one that's kind of weird, and I've never seen a customer do this. It doesn't mean it doesn't happen, but I've just not had customers do it. It's where if your domain or if your forest is contoso.com, you have a tree in that, or excuse me, a server in that forest that has the domain DNS namespace of fabricam.com. So that's disjoint. The server name has a DNS domain name that's different than the domain name of the domain itself, the DNS domain name of the domain itself, right? Does anybody have that in their forests, disjoint? You see one hand, and he's laughing about it. So that's one that's not very common. So we have to make these statements, and we test for this, and we make sure that we do support these things. But a lot of Microsoft technologies don't support these. If you have these types of namespaces, single label domain and disjoint especially, the non-contiguous or discontiguous is not that big a deal, but the single label domain and disjoint, those are really odd, and there's a lot of technologies that don't support that. It's probably a pretty good idea to think about getting away from those type of namespaces if we can, right? It's a lot of work sometimes to do that, but some of our technologies aren't going to allow you to deploy in those kind of forests, so you may want to get away from them anyway. So more about prerequisites. The operating system that you install Exchange on when you're doing on-prem Exchange 2013, we require 2008 R2 SP1 standard or enterprise or 2012 standard or data center. All right? No 2008 without the R2. 2008 R2 or better, SP1 or later. Okay? Other components, obviously you've got some special components that need to be installed, IIS and other OS components, the .NET framework. These are normal things. This is all documented in the prerequisites page on TechNet, right? The management framework and UCMA, right? Nothing special there. These are the things that just need to be installed before you can install Exchange. So these are some great links. These give you some information about when things happened, and information like the RTM as of when we RTM'd 10, 11, 12. Someone thought that was a really cool idea. Let's RTM all of Office on 10, 11, 12. So basically all of Office RTM that date. The link will take you to a Exchange Team blog post talking about the RTM. GA stands for General Availability. That was basically the day that our customers with Software Assurance could download the bits, get Exchange 2013. That was a long time before the coexistence model was in place that we had. The download of the RTM bits is there on the third link. The fourth talks about service GA. Now, what service GA was is that's when we released Office 2013, Office 365 2013, right? That was also when we released when the service packs came out, service pack 2010 came out at service GA, did it not? No? Okay, sorry, my bad. And then CU1 released on 4.2.13, and there's a link to download that as well. All right, so the service GA talks about what is service GA, and the download link for WW and the download link for CU1 gives you the two places you can go download the whole package to install Exchange for yourself. So we've changed a little bit. In Exchange 2010, we used roll-up updates, RUs, as the periodic update cycle. And that periodic update cycle was something around every 6 weeks. It wasn't exact, but it was usually somewhere around every 6 weeks. We'd get an RU come out the door. And what we've done is we've changed that up a little bit. So we're going to have security updates. So those will come out with your Patch Tuesday as normal. And they're really just the security patches. They're the things that need to be fixed for security reasons. And they're delivered, when it says here, delivered via independent packages, that means they're like the normal Patch Tuesday patches. They come out and they fix a specific thing. It's not an entire build of Exchange. Cumulative updates are going to come out quarterly, right? That's four times a year. And the version shipped in those CUs is the same for the on-premises customer, for most of you that are out here deploying, as what we're putting into Office 365. It's the same build. It's the same Exchange, right? And each CU is supported for a period of 3 months after the release date of the next CU. Now, that's an interesting statement. And one of the PMs that was reviewing this gave me an idea of what to talk about on this. We say we support it for 3 months after the release of the next CU. So that means quarterly we're expecting you to update. The thing is, just because we expect you to do the update doesn't mean Exchange is going to quit working. Just like most unsupported things, what this really means is that if you call us with a problem, you're probably not going to get a patch, right? You may not get security patches and things like that for the CUs that go, quote unquote, out of support, right? So we really expect you with Exchange 2013 to start deploying those CUs, those cumulative updates on a quarterly basis. Right? And we're still going to have service packs, and the service packs are going to be a periodic release that has all the CUs rolled up and new features rolled up in there. Okay? So what are the benefits of this new model? One of the really good things is we feel like it has a better predictability about when you're going to see these releases. Four times a year, you're going to get a cumulative update, once every quarter. You have the dedicated security releases. All that's coming out on Patch Tuesday is the security stuff, the things that we really feel like you need to install on Exchange for security reasons, right? The data center, when it says here, data center scale validation, that means these CUs that you're getting on a quarterly basis are run in our data centers. We've run them, we've seen them, we know what they act like. They've got a big test bed that it's been run through before you get them, and we feel like that's a big benefit to you. This improved support for hybrid deployments, that means that obviously we're testing this in Office 365, so we see those hybrid deployments, we see how it looks, and we're able to more quickly move on languages, new languages. How many in here are not strictly English language deployments, right? And how many of you have had to wait for the non-English language versions to come out? They don't come out at the same time. Yeah, in the United States, I see a few hands. In North America, it's probably not as big a deal as it will be overseas, that language resource problem. But this, for some of our customer base, that's a big deal. Getting those language resources out on that quarterly basis with the CUs is going to be a big deal for a lot of our customers. So what are the differences between what we're doing now with the CU and what we did before with RU? The CU is a larger update package, and what I mean by that is that the RUs would kind of be small roll-ups of bug fixes and things like that, but it wasn't a full Exchange install. What you're seeing here is that with a cumulative update, it's a full Exchange build, kind of like what we did before with service packs, where you got a full install of Exchange. When you go in and you modify your web.config file, as you do this full install of Exchange, it uninstalls and reinstalls Exchange, and you're going to lose that web.config customization you have. So you need to plan for that when you do these CU updates. Make sure that if you have customizations, you know how to put them back into the web.config file, all right, or XML files or whatever you have out there. I've seen customers that get into the OWA HTML files so that they have a customized web browser interface for their users. Those kind of things will be lost when we do updates to CUs, okay? Loss of server customization, installation failure recovery. So one of the things you'll see is that if you have a failure of a cumulative update, we'll talk a little bit more about this. We have a process for how you recover from that type of failure, right? And I actually talk about that on a later slide. And then One of the things we've heard over and over and over again with the roll-up updates, it was very difficult for you to be able to look in, for instance, the GUI and see what version each of your servers was on. With the CU, we're tagging the machines, and you will be able to tell what CU is installed. So you get the version number will be updated. So that's a good thing as well. So once again, CU1 is a full exchange install. When you go download it and install it, it's out of the box CU1. You don't have to install and then add CU1 on top of it. Once again, this talks about how the web server is lost, but it's a full install, full reinstall, just like a service pack was. Once again, CU1 is required for coexistence with 2010 and 2007. If the CU install fails, what you do is you have to wipe the machine and reinstall using Recover Server. So you'll do a setup.com WAC Recover Server, exe.recover server. Right? And what that does, so we're not talking about wiping out your databases. The databases will still be there. Recover Server pulls down all the Exchange configuration out of Active Directory and reapplies it so that you'll have access to everything. All the configuration should be there. Right? So we have had people, I've seen people discussing this where they've had failed CU updates when they've tried to install it. And the way to recover from that, wipe the server and do a Recover Server. Don't scratch it from the Active Directory. Don't go into ADSI edit and whack it out. Don't do that, right? Use the Recover Server, go through the process. It'll clean itself up, okay? More curtains. Love the curtains. So let's talk about the upgrade process a little bit and coexistence process. So in the coexistence model first, we'll talk a little bit about the functional layering. You've probably seen this in some of the other slide decks. Remember, in Exchange 2010, we had a different functional layering model. You had your level 7 load balancer, and then what we call the middle tier would have been client access and hub transport and unified messaging, and then the mailbox was your database tier, right? So you had this concept of having multiple tiers, and sometimes customers actually deploy it this way. In the later years of Exchange 2010, Microsoft, we really pushed you to move toward having all of those client access, hub transport, and mailbox on one server and get away from this logical separation. But the logical separation was still in code, so you would see that client access on one machine might be talking to mailbox on another machine and things like that. This is one of the things I know that Ross talks about in a lot of his slide decks. And when we go to 2013, the big change is that the authentication, the proxy, the redirect, all moves towards client access. We get away from the requirement for the complexity of the level 7 load balancer, and we move towards a level 4 load balancer. And then the APIs, business logic, and all the store information all goes into the mailbox, right? And then one of the things that Ross's presentations usually show is that none of these servers, when you get the protocol to the mailbox server, is not going to talk across to other mailbox servers the way we had before. So this is a big difference in the way things work in Exchange, and this is a big piece of why coexistence works the way it does in Exchange 2013 with the 2010-2007 models. Okay, the server can't talk from hub transport on one server over to mailbox on another the way we did before. They will talk hub transport and deliver down. You'll talk CAS to CAS proxy and then deliver down, right? So it doesn't work the same way that it did before. Let's talk a little bit about how the upgrade process will work. So we got one of these multiple step build slides here. So the first step you'll do, obviously, is make sure that you have, this is specifically for Exchange 2010. We've got another slide that'll do 2007 in just a moment. But right now, 2010 specific, you'll install Exchange 2010 SP3, right? It says across the org, right? Every server in your organization needs to go to 2010 SP3 if you're doing the 2010 coexistence or upgrade model, okay? You want to look at the Microsoft Connectivity Analyzer or the Exchange Remote Connectivity Analyzer and make sure that you have good connectivity. Make sure everything's healthy, right? As always, I would recommend you run XBPA and any of those other tools to make sure everything's healthy before you start doing your upgrades, right? Before you start introducing the complexity of another version of Exchange into your system, make sure you're good and healthy first. Make sure your connectivity is working the way you expect it to. Make sure everything, if there's mitigations you need to make, if there's things you need to upgrade because you've got problems in the system, make sure you get all that stuff fixed first. Then you do your AD preparation for Exchange 2013. Get the schema out there, let it replicate out. The second step is to install both Mailbox and CAS. And we'll talk about this later, but it's important. Both Mailbox and CAS. Okay, you can't just install CAS and think this is going to work. Can't just install Mailbox and think this is going to work. You need both roles. The next step is you're going to obtain the new certificates. One of the cool things here is we're not adding a namespace. Your existing namespace for Exchange 2010 carries over. Doesn't have to. There's a lot of talk about going to a single namespace. That's one option. You could reduce down to one namespace, but you don't have to change namespaces if that's not the way you want to deploy Exchange. The next step, you switch that primary namespace over to where now Exchange clients will connect into Exchange 2013 client access and be proxied to where they need to go. They'll be proxied to Exchange 2010 or 2013, wherever that mailbox happens to be. Once again, at this point, you'll want to validate using MCA and Exchange RCA. Make sure that everything connects as you think it should. Make sure that you're not getting errors for those. Also, when we say that, the validations I forgot to mention before, we do have test commandlets, test MAPI connectivity, test OA connectivity, things like that, that you can run that will let you use those kind of tests to see if things are working. Keep pushing buttons and things aren't moving. Next, you finish building out your DAG, right? The first step was to get at least one mailbox server in there. You may need to install more mailbox servers, configure your DAG, build the DAG out. Then you start moving users from 2010 mailboxes. You move the mailboxes to 2013. And so now we got a little animation moving the little mailbox over. And at this point, it's move into the next site and repeat for additional sites. Right, anything earth-shattering there? Anybody see anything? Any questions on that? All right, let's go to Exchange 2007 and talk about it. This is very, very similar. A lot of the same things that you saw in the Exchange 2010 are going to happen here. First step, once again, get up to the coexistence version. Got to get 2007 plus RU10 out there. You got to get them out there, get them installed. Prepare your AD. Deploy a mailbox and a CAS. And then we're going to create a legacy namespace. This is the first difference we see. There is a legacy namespace, much the same way we had between 2010 and 2007. We created a legacy, for instance, a legacy.contoso.com. You see that up there in red underneath the name on the left side of the screen. Legacy.contoso.com. So if your namespace is mail.contoso.com, we're going to create a legacy. Your clients aren't going to go to legacy.contoso.com. They're still going to go to mail in the long run, but you need that legacy for the proxy to take place for 2007. You're going to create the DNS records that are going to allow that to work, and you're going to point the legacy, point the DNS records to the legacy.contoso.com namespace so that when you test it, which is the next step, well, it doesn't say it here, but you want to test it at that point, and you want to make sure that when someone connects to legacy.contoso.com, whatever your namespace is, that they get that connection and those connections work as you would expect. The next, you're going to obtain and deploy certificates. So before I said we're not changing namespaces, here we need to add legacy.contoso.com to our certificates. We always say you want to keep the smallest number of certificates you can. So in this case, it's going to look a lot like an Exchange 2010, 2007 coexistence certificate. You're going to have your namespace plus the legacy namespace in there. Okay, so it's a very similar process to what we did with 2010. Then you deploy those certificates on Exchange 2007 CAS. Now, you could have two certificates. One certificate goes on 2013 that doesn't have legacy, or that, no, you're going to need that. It says here to deploy it on 2007 because it says also in the first line, obtain and deploy certificates on 2013. Then another line that says deploy it on 2007 as well. So remember, you got to put this back on 2007. So what you got to remember, though, you don't want to take the old one the old namespace is out of there. The mail has to be in there on the 2007 because your users are still connected to 2007 under mail. You haven't moved the DNS over yet. So you need to have all those namespaces on 2007 so that when users connect to 2007, they're going to get, as mail.contoso.com, the right certificate, and the certificate's going to be okay. But then when we move the pointer over and they're going to be redirected and sent over to legacy, you want that to work as well, right? So you got to have both those names on Exchange 2013 and 2007. Then you switch your primary namespace. This is your DNS. Change it to where when you go to mail.contoso.com, it goes to 2013. And then validate that connection using MCA, Exchange RCA, and you'll see that the 2013 does redirect you over to legacy and everything works. Then you build out your DAG once again and start moving mailboxes. And then you move over to your additional sites, right? See a lot of people taking pictures. Remember, you can download these slide decks. Please feel free to take pictures if you want, but much higher quality, download the slide decks. Beg your pardon? They should be available now. They're on the msteched.com website. They should be available for you. msteched.com? All the slide decks should be available. This is, someone had a hand up? Yes. Okay. Okay, so what you've said is that in 2010, in 2010, your internet-facing CAS array is CAS only. You don't have mailbox servers in that CAS array. And we're saying now that site doesn't have CAS. But you're saying now, what do we do? Because I'm saying that that you need CAS and mailbox. The reason we're going to get to it here in a minute, as a matter of fact, in about two slides, we'll talk about it a little bit. Is that PowerShell only runs on the mailbox server. PowerShell doesn't run on the client access. Right? So you have to have at least a mailbox server somewhere to be able to run. So since you're doing your internet-facing site, you may have a temporary mailbox server in that site just to be able to run those PowerShell commandlets to start with. And it is possible to have a CAS-only site still. That makes sense? I think it's kind of an edge case. A lot of customers aren't doing that. It was an interesting deployment scenario in Exchange 2010 to have a CAS-only site. I'm sorry? Before SP2? In 2013, yeah. In 2013, it's really not an architecture that we're recommending. There's not the reasons why you did that in 2010 no longer hold true in 2013. So having those... that CAS-only site, while it is possible to do that, there's really no reason to do that. You're adding a complexity to your environment that's not necessary. And if anybody's seen me talk before, one of the things I preach is get the complexity out of your environment. Complexity is risk. Risk causes failure. Let's get the complexity out of the environment if we can. Okay? If you need more on that, we'll be at Ask the Expert tonight. We can talk about it. Okay? Another question? So the question was around the legacy domain on 2013. So for Exchange 2007, if you're going to be in a coexistence model 2007, you need the certificates to have legacy in there. And it needs to be on both 2007 and 2010. Because when they connect to the 2007 CAS, it's going to look at the SSL, and it won't. That's where your SSL termination point is, and you need to have that there. Okay. So legacy, so the question is, does it do redirection to 2010 automatically? 2010 coexistence with Exchange 2013 does not require a legacy namespace. Okay? 2010 coexistence does not require, I'm sorry, the legacy namespace. Okay? It will automatically proxy, not redirect, it'll proxy you to Exchange 2010 client access. Not for Exchange 2010 coexistence. 2010 coexistence, you will get your Exchange 2010 OWA if you're in a 2010 mailbox. It'll look like Exchange 2010, even though your first connection comes into 2013 and is proxied over. But you will get a 2013 OWA once the mailbox has been moved, right? Only for Exchange 2007 coexistence do we need that legacy namespace, okay? And in that case, you do get redirected over to 2007. It's not a proxy over to 2007. All right, let's look a little bit deeper into each of these steps. So to prepare for Exchange 2013, first we install our coexistence. We've been over this a few times. SP3 for 2010, SP3 RU10 need to be installed. And you do your prepare AD for the 2013 schema. Here's some links so you can find the Microsoft Connectivity Analyzer or the Remote Connectivity Analyzer. How many of you have used the XRCA website to test your connectivity? How many of you knew you could download that and use that in your own, download a version of a tool that does basically that same thing, right? Not nearly as many hands went up. This is great. You can now download that tool, use that internally. The Microsoft Connectivity Analyzer is a download tool you run in your own site to test that out. So this allows you to test internally to test your connectivity from your client desktops, for instance, so that you can see how they're connecting and things, right? And you still have the built-in test commandlets we mentioned earlier. The next step was to deploy Exchange 2013. So interesting here is, as we mentioned before, you need both mailbox and CAS because you can't run the 2013 PowerShell commandlets without a 2013 mailbox server. CAS is proxy only, okay? So you have to have at least one of each for that first install. And because of the fact that when we start migrating that namespace over, all your connections are going to go through CAS, you probably want the whole CAS environment stood up. How many CASs you're going to be deploying before you move that namespace over, right? And since we talk an awful lot about the coexistence of mailbox and CAS, and the most simple solution for Exchange is mailbox and CAS on the same server, you're going to have them all installed anyway. You may not have built out your DAG, but you will have all your CAS deployed in that case, and that's pretty much the recommendation, right? There is a GUI or a command line. There is no in-place upgrade, right? Just like we haven't had for years and years and years, there's no in-place upgrade of Exchange from 2010 to 2013 or from 2007 to 2013. It's a new install on a new server, move mailbox. That's the only way you can do this. We do have this interesting new parameter for setup.exe called / I accept Exchange server license terms. Okay? Nice and easy to type. I think legal made us do that. Thank the lawyers. All right, but it's new. You have to put it in there, or it will prompt you and ask you if you accept the terms, right? But this gets you to bypass that. It won't run if you don't put it in there. Okay. You need to put that. If you're doing the command line, you need to put that in there. It won't run. Then you create your legacy namespace. Once again, 2007 only. You create the DNS record internally and externally, and then you validate using our tools, right? Have I said validate often enough? We validate over and over and over again. Every step of the way, make sure that we're getting validations. Yes, we got a question down here. So the question is, if we're doing ActiveSync only from outside, so we're not doing OWA, we're not doing Exchange Web Services, we're only doing ActiveSync from the outside, do we need to use a legacy namespace for Exchange 2007? I don't know, guys. I think we do. Yeah, because it needs to be able to redirect you over. ActiveSync actually will proxy to you, but you do need the legacy namespace to proxy you over. Okay. All right, yeah. So Scott says it really depends on how long you're going to be doing this. How long is your coexistence period going to be? Right. So Ross says, number one, you do need the legacy namespace.
No, you don't. Because
we proxy. Oh, Lord have mercy. I've got this all wrong now. Okay, so just to confuse things more, step back. All right, so you don't need the legacy namespace for ActiveSync. It will proxy you over, right? And the question is, how long, if there's the coexistence model, that doesn't matter anyway, because if you're just doing the whole thing one weekend, how long are you going to have that model anyway, right? So how many of you have actually done migrations that are just one weekend, we're done, right? So if you've got a small enough organization, that's kind of easy to do. If you're talking some of these bigger organizations, 10,000 users, that's a little more difficult. And I've had customers do it up to 4,000 or 5,000 users. I've seen them do major updates with very little coexistence time. So, did I confuse you enough with that one? Sorry for the confusion. So obtain and deploy the certificates. So we should have caught this before it came out here. Recommended practice is, not best practice, recommended practice is minimize the number of certificates. All right, so if you're in Exchange 2007 coexistence mode, get one certificate that has legacy in it, has mail in it, whatever other names you need to put in there, right? Minimize the number of host names. Don't have a name internal and a name external, right? We've always believed that the security through obscurity is not the greatest way to do security. Having an internal namespace is probably not that great an idea. It's not going to really save you a whole lot in security. So have mail.contoso.com used internally and externally. Legacy.contoso.com used internally and externally. Okay? Reduce those numbers. You split DNS for that. Don't list your machine names in your certificate names, in your SAN certs. Right? There's no reason to have fully qualified domain name of server1.contoso.com and server2.contoso.com and server3.contoso.com. Right? There's no reason to do that. You don't need those names on the certificates. So don't do that. You need your legacy, you need your mail, and an auto discover is really about all you need, right? And use those subject alt name certs. It's the same certs we've been using in the past, so there's nothing new. If you're an Exchange administrator for 2007, 2010, you've had to get these subject alt name certs anyway. You know what we're doing here. There's a great certificate wizard in the Exchange Admin console. It gets better over the years how we do these certificate wizards. It's very powerful. It's very good. It's really the way to go rather than trying to manually generate. That's one of the things I'll do is use the certificate wizard instead of trying to do it with commandlets. Most stuff I'll do commandlets to manage Exchange servers, to do things with my Exchange servers. But with the certificates, I'll use the certificate wizard. It's a great wizard. And what's really cool now is that within a month of when your certificate's going to expire, 30 days actually, which is about a month, it'll pop up EAC. When you go into Exchange Admin Console, it'll pop up and it'll tell you that you got a certificate. I think there's a question up in the back, and I am not going to be able to hear you, so can you please come to one of the... Anyway, so 30 days in advance, it's going to pop up and it's going to tell you you've got a certificate that's coming due. And then every day when you go into EAC, it's going to come up and tell you that. Go ahead and get your question.
Any issue with wildcard certificates?
Wildcard certs? The problems we've had with wildcard certs in the past have been with certain clients that don't really support them. I think we're past the point where you're probably going to have those old, like, Windows Mobile 5 clients that didn't really like wildcard certs. I don't think we have any real problems with wildcard certs. Do you guys know of anything?
The big thing is the security.
Yeah, I was going to say your security guys will probably have problems with them, but I don't think that technically, on the technical side of the house, I don't think we have problems with wildcard certs.
Okay, thank
you. Your
security
guys, typically my customers, the security guys aren't going to let you do that. If your security guys are good with that, the problem is, as Exchange Administrator, we're going to create a certificate and we're going to leave it laying around somewhere. And then that's a security violation. If you've got good, tight control of your certificates, wildcard certs are okay. And if your certificate security guys are okay with that, then technically we don't have problems with them. Anything else real quick down here in the front again? I'm sorry, could you ask that again?
I have a lot of remote servers.
Yep. Yeah, so, okay, so if you've got, the question is, do I need a certificate for these servers that aren't really in CAS arrays? If you've got users that are going to connect to them using the client access servers there under those names, somehow you're going to have those names on. So if you've got a branch office scenario where you've got a lot of branch offices with Exchange, say you've got 30 branch offices and you've got an Exchange server in each of those 30 branch offices, and that's where the users are going to connect, they're going to be connecting over an HTTP type connection, they're going to need a certificate. So your namespace planning is not going to be as trivial as if I have two physical locations or three physical locations, right? We could still do one of these things where we have a single namespace and things work like that, but then users are going to be going out to connect sometimes and coming back in, and you may not like that very much. So you may need to have a much more complex namespace. That's okay. The reason we start with this and say minimize the number of certificates is for simplicity. Sometimes requirements drive us away from simplicity. If your requirement is we have to have these servers in these remote locations, we have to, this is just not a question, then we need to have certificates there, and you're not going to be as in the trivial model of just two places with two namespaces or a single namespace. It may not work for you, right? There's nothing that says you're wrong, you can't do that, right? We still support that model where you have branch offices with servers in them, okay? The next step is to switch the primary namespace to 2013 CAS and validate. You need to validate that legacy namespace creation, right? Because that's where your users are going to connect if they're 2007 users. And you don't want to just all of a sudden, because we switched the namespace over, have every user not able to get to Exchange. So you've got to validate these things. You've got to test them along the way. Make sure your load balancing is there. Your legacy namespace is still a layer 7 load balancer, right? Just because we're putting Exchange 2013 out there and 2013 uses the layer 4 load balancer, you still need to have layer 7 in front of the legacy namespace until you deprecate that legacy namespace and get all your users off of 2007. Make sure you configure that AutoDiscover service internal URI so that now you're pointing AutoDiscover to Exchange 2013. And make sure that you have that in the load balancer, FQDN. And configure your AutoDiscover site scope so that if you've got a lot of AD sites, that you have your site coverage map set up the way you want it, so that your users come to the right AutoDiscover through your systems, right? Update your DNS. Mail and AutoDiscover namespaces point to 2013. Legacy does not. Remember, legacy stays pointing at Exchange 2007, right? But mail and AutoDiscover, you move over to CAS 2013. Then update your publishing rules and your reverse proxy, right? Make sure legacy is still in your reverse proxy. And once again, MCA and XRCA to test that. Moving mailboxes. So we've got some new migration services. Right, we have better orchestration. I love the name, that term, orchestration. We have a better way to provide batch management and things like that. It has better migration reporting and better retry semantics. Okay, new commandlets, the new migration batch and get migration user statistics. I think that Yap is talking about these more in his session, which I could tell you to go attend that, but you'd have to leave and go do it because he's presenting it now. So go out to the msteched.com and download his presentation. I think he's talking more about the actual semantics of how you do the mailbox moves, right? I think he's going more deep into that. Obviously, all these migration services, these new migration services, are available from the admin console. So let's talk a little bit about public folder migrations. So has everybody heard a little bit about the new public folder model, our new modern public folders? Everybody know a little bit about them? They're not in public folder databases anymore. I see some heads shaking up there, so I'm going to give you a little bit of background. There is some good public folder migration sessions. I think there's a link. I'm calling one of them out in the late part of the deck where we talk about the resources there, the things you can go to. There is a public folder migration session. It'd probably be a good one if you've got a lot of public folders in your environment. But just at a high level, public folders are now moved into basically what's a mailbox database, and they're replicated the same way a mailbox would be replicated, right? It's a DAG replication. It's not using public folder replication anymore, right? So the users won't see it any differently. The users will still connect to a public folder the way they connect to them now. The thing is, you're not going to have 4 or 5 or 7 copies that are all primary copies that the user can make changes on. It's not a multi-master model anymore. It's like a DAG. It's like a mailbox in a DAG. It's like a mailbox database in a DAG where you have one master. That's where the users will access the public folders, and they'll replicate out. Existing public folder data can be migrated to Exchange 2013. We're not abandoning your public folder data. We're not abandoning public folders. It's just a different way of doing public folders. And once again, like I said before, end user experience doesn't change. End users will connect to public folders tomorrow the same way they did yesterday. Right? Question? I'm sorry. You're going to have to speak up or go to a mic. I really can't hear you. Okay. I'll repeat it. Okay, the question is, am I saying officially Microsoft is not abandoning public folders? Public folders, the way you've seen them in the past, are supported on Exchange 2010 until Exchange 2010 is no longer supported. Public folders, the way you see them on Exchange 2013, which is different, but it is still public folders to your user, will be supported as long as 2013 is supported. Microsoft is not abandoning public folders. We did say at one point, which we made some statements that were taken as we are going to not ever do this again, and we very quickly came back and said, wait, we're not abandoning public folders. We still, to this day, will have public folders. Our support model says Exchange 2013 will be supported at least until 2023. That's our support model. Public folders are here to stay at least till 2023. Okay? That's the support. Is that our support model? That's as official as it can get. Our support model officially says 10 years from the release date, they'll be here until we no longer support it. I guess I should say 10, 11, 20, 22, or whatever the general availability date, you know. So it's sometime late in 2022 is when 2013 goes out of support. So we will be supporting them at least until then. So 10 more years minimum, okay? I can't make any statements about the next version. I don't know, but I don't think they're going to. You can? Yes, you can make whatever statements you'd like. Okay, so one of the things about the migration is that Exchange 2010 and 2007 users cannot access modern public folders. They cannot access 2013 public folders. Okay? So if your mailbox is on 2007 or 2010, you will not have access to the new modern public folders. In other words, move the mailboxes first, then move the public folders. That's all it means. Move all your mailboxes to 2013 first. Once you've got all the users over, at least all the public folder users, once you've got all the public folder users over, then migrate your public folders. Migrate your public folders after the mailboxes. Yeah.
Yeah. So security settings migrate over just as easily as the public folders for 2010?
Yes. Yes, they do. So the question is, do the security settings migrate just as easy as the data? And yes, they do. Right? So the migration is a cutover. And we'll talk a little bit more about this. But data is replicated, much like an online mailbox move. Users are still accessing the 2007 or 2010 public folders. Data is replicated. You've got a terabyte of public folder data. It's going to take a while for it to replicate. And then at some point, we make the decision, we raise a flag, disconnect everybody from the Exchange 2007 or 2010 public folders. And then when we lower the flag, they connect back to the 2010. So the next slide, we actually talk about that a little bit better. Analyze, we have some scripts, and there's not a link in here. I thought about this about an hour ago while I was reviewing this, I thought, we got a lot of really good links in here. We should have had a link to the scripts. But there's some scripts you can go out, you can search for them. There's some documentation on how to do this. Beg your pardon? They're in the box. Okay, so those scripts, you can download them as well. You don't need to, but the scripts are in the box. Analyze the existing public folder hierarchy. It'll tell you how many copies, how many different public folder mailboxes are recommended in your environment. Right? So we got the tools to help you size it, to help you figure out how many mailboxes you need. When you start that copy of the public folder data, like I said, the data is being copied and the users will be accessing the legacy. And the data migration happens in the background while they're using that data. And then there's that short downtime at the end where we raise that flag, disconnect everybody from the old, and then reconnect everybody to the new. You can switch back, so there is a fallback position, but once you switch the users over, so it's a one-time switch over. Once you switch them over, and they start making changes in the new public folders, in the modern public folders, in the 2013 public folders, if you switch them back, any changes that have been made on the 2013 public folders are lost on 2007 or 2010. So you need to be aware of that, and you need to understand the implications of that. If you have mail-enabled public folders, you need to remember that if I'm sending mail to a public folder, only one public folder can receive that mail. Okay? So if I'm sending to team as my public folder, there's only going to be one recipient at contoso.com that can receive that. It's going to be a legacy one, then you're going to switch over and it's going to be in the new public folders, the modern public folders, okay? It can only be received one place. The thing is that when we lock to do that last step of the migration, if you've got mail going to those public folders, it's going to hang up in the queues. And if you try to force it, force connection or message retry or something like that, it's not going to fix your queues. What you have to do is restart the transport server on the servers that have those stuck messages, and then they'll reconnect to the other public folder, the new public folders on 2013, and they'll deliver at that point. Okay? Does that make sense? Why is that? I'm not sure I have an answer for why that is. It's got to change. It says I'm delivering it to 2007. Yeah. Okay, so. So once it's gone through categorization, it's determined this is where my destination is, right? And so it knows where that destination is on 2007, 2010, and says that's where I need to deliver it into that store. And if you lock it while we're in flight, it's going to say, I can't reach that anymore because we've turned off the ability for the 2007. Once we do that transition, it's a switchover. Once we do that, we've locked it and it can't receive anymore. But it's already categorized that message, so it's hung up in the queue saying, that's where I want to deliver. But then you restart the transport service and it'll recategorize and say, okay, I need to deliver over there. I'm sorry, it changed. I'll deliver it over there now. Does that make sense? Right? So it knows it needs to go to the old mailbox, the legacy public folder. And it knows that, and that's what it has in the queue. And until you cause it to recategorize and figure out where it needs to deliver, it's not going to deliver over there. So what about managing coexistence? So this is pretty simple. Exchange 2013 mailboxes are managed through the Exchange Admin Console. You can view the legacy mailboxes, 2010, 2007 mailboxes, and most properties can be updated. There's a few limitations. If you need to get into those few limitations, you're going to have to go back to Exchange Management Console or the Exchange 2007 scripting to do that, right? So you'll be able to do a lot of your management through the new Exchange Admin Console, but not everything. All right? I think we're at the summary, which says updates are required for coexistence. We knew that, right? We told you can't coexist until we get these out. This has not been a secret from the day we released. We need that legacy namespace for 2007. EAC's certificate management is certainly improved. It's a great management tool. And public folder migration is cut over, right? It all happens at once. Everybody's using legacy, and then you cut over, and everybody's using the new ones. Question? So the question is, I've got 2007, I'm upgrading 2013, I've got Link 2010 running, we're not upgrading Link 2010 at this time, do we have concerns for the UM role? You're going to have a new UM role, you're going to have to rebuild your pointers over to the UM servers, so you will have the concern that you have to do that. It is well documented how to do that. Okay? Question here. Any tips on journaling? I don't have any right now. Come to Ask the Experts. I can find you someone who has answers. I'm sorry I don't have those answers right now. I know we had tips on journaling. All right, Scott has journaling tips and tricks in his tips and tricks tomorrow. Or catch him tonight. Now here, this is the coolest part of the whole presentation. Is when the little bird flies off. Now, Scott showed me this one. Here's the really cool part, is when you fly it backwards in. That's cool. All right. All right. So, any more questions?
Yep, up here.
Got one here.
I know.
Yep. Okay, so the question is, we've got a new blog article that came out just recently about ambiguous namespaces, and I talk about simplifying namespaces. So the problem is, I'm not sure how to talk about this. The problem is that if you can have in Exchange 2013 a single namespace, mail.contoso.com, for your entire organization, whether you have one or two or four data centers, right? There's implications, right? You have to make sure that you have the availability of your file share witness for your DAGs. You need to be aware that if you've got one namespace, your clients may be connecting to any given data center, no matter where their mailbox is located in the DAG. So you've got to take those things into account as you're thinking about that architecture, right? The thing is, if you try to have something, I'm not real sure how to go about this with the Scott or Ross, where they're talking about the ambiguous namespace blog post. That may be a good idea. That's a great question. Yeah, okay. Our. So if you need two namespaces, one for data center one and one for data center two, you can have mail one and mail two, right? The thing is, what? Okay, so this is about if you're not using split DNS. So one of our recommendations has always been. Okay. All right, so what Ross said is that you still have the RPC client access array namespace, right? But if you had that in 2010, so if you used a different namespace there, I mean, you used the same namespace, mail.contoso.com, for your client access array as you used for your HTTP namespace, that's That's what they're talking about there. You need to not do that. We really said you need to have a separate name. And it wasn't real well documented. So it has to do with that client access array namespace. I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead. Hopefully, yeah. Let's just throw me a softball here. Thank you. Appreciate you guys. So you're going to have one copy of the public folder moving forward. Right. And that's what the scripts will help you figure out is how to distribute those folders across public folder stores. All right. And Scott says he's got some tips and tricks. So the question was, if I've got very heavily used public folders, how do I determine how many public folder stores do I need? And the scripts will help with that. And Scott's got some tips and tricks on that. So the tools will help you figure out how to break those public folders out and spread them across, because one of the big differences is you have one copy, one of those public folders. So if you've got a folder that you have 10,000 users that access, you've got to remember that goes on, there's one of those, and all 10,000 users are coming to that server to access that public folder now. And so if you've got 500 of these public folders, you may need to spread those out across multiple servers so that your users aren't all coming to the same server to get to all those public folders. I'll get you next. That's fine.
On the client access servers for 2013, do they forward to the client access servers for 2010 during the migration, or can we actually bring down the 2010 if we're pointing everyone to 2013?
So what you do when you change that namespace over for the 2010 and 2013 coexistence, you change your namespace over to 2013, it's a proxy.
So it's still going back to the 2010 CAS server.
To the 2010 CAS server, because a 2013 CAS server will not talk directly to a mailbox on 2010. It talks to the CAS. So it goes HTTP to HTTP service to HTTP service, and then down through the stack.
Okay?
Now down here, I'm sorry.
As you're doing the background replication prior to the cutover of the public folder servers, can you have the DAG doing its replication at the same time?
It will. Yes.
Okay.
So it will. So it's like doing a mailbox, an online mailbox move. Each one of those items that gets moved across is transacted. So I move this item. It's a message. In exchange, everything's a message, right? Every calendar item, everything is a message as far as exchange is concerned. And when I move one of those items over, whether that's a post or whether it's a Word document or whether it's an email that's sent to an email enabled public folder, it's a message. And when that gets moved over, that gets transacted. And as soon as that transaction happens, the DAG will replicate that. Okay? Make sense? Anything else?
Yep.
I didn't cut this too short, so you got your money. I'm sorry, down here in the front. 12 minutes. So, okay.
Do we have to sound down that server before we can upgrade to 2013?
You have one 2003 server in the environment. Is that what you said? Is it in the same Active Directory forest? Is it in the same implementation? Yes, you're going to have to remove that server from the environment before we will allow you to do your 2013 forest prep. Okay, does that make sense? So the question was, I have a 2003 server in my environment that I use to restore, and I have to have that in the environment. It has to be in that Active Directory forest for me to be able to do the restore as a requirement of the backup software. Do I have to, in the term you use, the sundown, and do I have to deprecate that server, sundown that server? Do I have to get that server out of the environment before I can do an upgrade? Absolutely. You have to get 2003 100% out of your environment before you can start with the prepare AD step. Okay? Flip a coin. You. I'll get you next. So The question is for unified messaging, and I've got to tell you, unified messaging is my worst part of Exchange, my most unknowledgeable part. But there's configuration in whatever you're using, your Cisco or your Link or whatever it is, there's configuration that says, there's how we talk to that server. And when you move over, it's now in the mailbox role. It's not a separate server, but you have to repoint it over. There's configuration in Link or whatever to move that over to where it knows, I need to be connecting to those servers now, right? It's documented. Yeah. Yeah, basically you got to rebuild your whole dial plan, I think. So the question is unified messaging, what do I do? It's basically building a new dial plan. Some things will move easily, some things won't. I'm sorry, who was right here? Yes, sir. So the question is, in the directions, we say that you need to upgrade 2010 to Service Pack 3 across the board. But you would like to be able to say, can I just apply the 2013 schema? And no, you cannot do that. You before we'll allow you to do the prepare AD for 2013, we need to have all those servers at 2010 SP3. So the answer was you can't do that because we do a detect for all Exchange 2010 servers, and we make sure that you're at 2010 SP3 on all those servers before we will allow you to schema update using our tools to schema update to Exchange 2013. So you cannot roll them together. Now you had a second one? So the question is, if you removed your public folder tree in 2010 and we want to reintroduce public folders into our environment in 2013, can you do that? Absolutely. Yes, you can. There's nothing to block you from bringing public folders back. I'm going to go here, and then I'll come back up to you.
He was first.
All right, then I'll go to you, and I'll come back down to you. Thank you for that.
With the new patching model of Exchange 2013 doing quarterly cumulative updates, what is the Exchange team doing to step up their game to make sure we don't end up with cumulative update version 2, cumulative update version, or I'm sorry, cumulative update 1, version 2, cumulative update 1, version 3?
So I think that's a fair question, and I don't think I'm a person to answer that. I'm a consultant. I work with customers. I'm not in the product group. Ross, would you like to take that, or would you like to come to Ask the Experts and hammer however many of them you want to find? Okay, so Scott says, you know, we do roll these into the data center first, right? And I can tell you, I get updated, my servers get updated on a weekly basis. I saw the emails today about the update process going on right now for the bits that were built last week or whatever, right? So I know that we're doing what we can to step that up. I know that it was embarrassing as hell for us to put that out there. Nobody likes to do that and to have that kind of failure, right? And so we're doing what we can. I just don't have access to anything beyond that.
So as a follow-up, is there going to be a rollback method to go back to, if when CU2 comes out, can we roll back to CU1? Is that possible?
Come here, Ross.
Hello, sexy.
So to answer your first question, we're doing a lot of things to improve our patching process internally. We've increased our test pass matrix. We're actually, now that we're doing cumulative updates in the way that we're doing with full builds, we're actually running through a more rigorous test pass process that includes a lot more tests. We're also looking at, you know, just beyond the automated tests, which is where sometimes we miss certain cases, like one of the roll-ups when we had the issue with an Outlook bug that prompted was because we didn't validate Outlook in a particular scenario. So we're doing that. We also are deploying the builds, as Scott mentioned, in Exchange Online. So we are getting some validation through there. Like the build that will ultimately become CU2. Prior builds of that have been running in the service over the last several months. So the service isn't necessarily the service is not a guinea pig, but it's also the comments that are made that, you know, it's deployed in the service first is kind of a misnomer, because the service is sometimes running a later build than what will actually be shipped on premises. So there is a sort of difference there. But we do get validation logic of new functionality in the service. We also do significant testing in our Exchange dog food forest. And I've currently set up the plans for how we deploy CU2 in that as of last week. So we are working to help reduce the pain that we've introduced in the past 2 years with some of our service updates. But that's not to say that we won't ever make a mistake again and ship a bug. So to address your second question about rollback plans. So because it is not a patch file, there is no uninstall. Service pack either is going to complete it. I say service pack, it's CU, but you can think of a CU as, I mean, the setup process is exactly like a service pack. There's no rollback for a service pack. If the service pack fails, depending on where it is, you can't do a server recovery. And you'll have to take those databases and do a database restore on another server through a recovery database and extract that content if that happens.
But beyond that, setup succeeds.
Yes.
If you don't like it or it has a bug.
Yes, beyond that, which is the typical case. Yeah, which the rollback plan, if setup succeeds and you don't like the functionality for whatever reason, you stand up a new server, you move mailboxes, which is exactly what you would do in 2010, going service pack 1, to service pack 2, to service pack 3.
Potentially. In the future, you could do that, but if we introduce a database schema change.
Yes.
Like that,
the Well, that's why I'm saying move mailbox. It's move mailbox.
But they really should do the unit. But you'd be moving a mailbox from a later CU to an early one, potentially.
But moving mailbox is designed for that. I'm not saying move the database. I'm saying move mailbox.
Could you do a VM recovery instead of doing a rollback?
That is not something we support whatsoever.
That's what I wanted to hear, too.
Yes. Yes. I like his response.
One question.
Yeah, next question.
Sorry, it's back to the namespace stuff. I've got a very simple, small N 2010 server with an internal Active Directory domain matching the external domain name. Do you guys recommend that? Or should I rebuild my Active Directory with a .local?
Your Active Directory is named contoso.com?
Yeah.
And then your
external is the same thing.
And then your external DNS name is contoso.com.
Yeah, on the internet.
So
do you recommend that?
I don't know why
I'm
not to recommend
so many
that.
Different
I know
answers.
I know a lot of customers that do that. There's no reason not to do that.
Okay.
Our internal Active Directory at Microsoft.
I just wanted to clarify that.
Our internal directory at Microsoft is Microsoft.com.
Yeah.
Right?
That's what I
it's corp.microsoft.com.
I got some consultants saying, oh, you got to change your Active Directory because
I don't have a problem with it, but I don't stand with the security through obscurity. I don't think just because you have a domain name that seems to be the same as your external, I don't think that's a security violation of any
Great.
Sort.
Thank you.
Yes.
Just want some clarity on the 2007 to and 2013 coexistence, the use of the legacy.contoso.com.
Yep.
If it's that FQDN is already in use, what's my choice?
Legacy is just a name we use. It doesn't have to be legacy. It could be.
Oh,
You could call it rgillies.contoso.com and it would work.
Okay.
It could be anything as long as you publish it correctly and go into your commandlets and set it up right. Legacy is, there's nothing magic about the name legacy. We call it legacy because it's simple.
Oh, I see.
And it tells what it means. But there's nothing magic about that name. That's an attribute.
Okay.
There's an attribute
at
you
the time
set up
of install,
when you
I
set up
choice.
When you set up OWA okay. and things like that.
Yeah.
You'll set up that legacy.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Yep. How you uninstall Exchange 2010?
No, Exchange 2007. Let's say I move on my mailbox. I'm at the root folder. I'm at the point where I just want to get Exchange 2013.
So we have the guidance published. Mm-hmm. Well, by the time you've moved everything over and you're not actually touching those servers, it really doesn't matter. The reason we...
Uninstall in the reverse order. So you uninstall mailbox, reverse. Then...
Okay, uninstall mailbox,
then... Uninstall in alphabetical order.
Okay. And tomorrow in my tips and tricks... I'm 5 seconds over. No, wait. 1-0. Thank you very much. Y'all have a good evening. We'll see you at Ask the Expert.